This is Helen Cannon with Petals and Prose. Lately, I've been seeing hyacinths in the flower section of the grocery stores, not yet in my garden, but it won't be long. And I remembered a favorite essay that I bring out every time a hyacinth appears in my life, and I'd like to read that to you. It's called Hyacinths to Feed the Soul, condensed from a St. Joseph magazine and by Carol Ammon. When I was a student nurse, I babysat during off-duty hours to help pay my way. One day I got a call to sit for a whole weekend. All I knew when I headed for the job was that the couple wanted to get away from their two kids for a few days. Expecting that only rich people would be able to do that, I was surprised when the address turned out to be a tiny house in the borderline part of the city. Ted, the husband, had just joined an architectural firm. His wife, Ardith, looked terribly tired. They waited, obviously anxious to be off, while I got acquainted with the children, 2.5 years and 11 months old. I held the baby against my shoulder while Ted gave me the name of their hotel. "You'll be there the whole time?" I asked. "Well, that's headquarters," Ted answered. "We'll sleep late, prowl around town, eat when we get hungry, visit the art galleries." Mentally, I added up the cost of all this, plus my fee. "But won't that be terribly expensive?" I blurted. I had adopted them already. "Why, yes, I guess it will," Ted said, "but it's important." We're both tired and snapping at each other. Ardith especially needed to get away from the children. Ardith smiled at me. "Don't you know Gilistan by Musil Uddin Sadi, a sheikh who lived more than 700 years ago? If of thy mortal goods thou art bereft, and from thy slender store 2 loaves alone to thee are left, sell one, and with the dole buy hyacinths to feed thy soul." That poem taught me a good deal. These two didn't even have enough money for the trip, but they were tuned into a set of values I'd never even thought of. Sunday night, when they came back, they looked like teenagers who'd just discovered love, and my money was tucked under the ribbon on a pot holding a lavender hyacinth. Over the years, I've made a hobby of noticing people and whether or not they know about using non-essentials and extravagances occasionally to feed the soul. They're the happiest people. A church organist I know grew up in a family during the Depression. They didn't starve, but her childhood was not happy. "Then when I was in the 7th grade, things changed," she told me. "My folks bought a secondhand piano and arranged with a music teacher in town to accept vegetables in payment for my lessons. The neighbors called it a useless extravagance. The miracle is that my folks knew what was important. 20 cashmere sweaters couldn't have charged me with the confidence that piano gave me." A no-nonsense mother I know lets Christmas and family birthdays release her usual tight lid on frivolity. "When I was a child," she explains, "gifts were always sturdy shoes, warm gloves, underwear. After I got married, I decided that we'd somehow manage the essentials, that the special occasions would be for fun. Now my husband and I give a play a white velvet coat she's worn twice and has had cleaned twice, but which makes her feel positively elegant. For the children, redeemable coupons for gooey treats at the ice cream store. Flowers given on birthdays or other predictable occasions are hardly hyacinths, but when bouquets are offered to celebrate Monday or the anniversary of the day we got the car paid for, or simply as thank you for putting up with me for so long, well, that's a different matter. To send a relative a card on his birthday is not unusual, but to pop a note into the mail apropos of nothing is a hyacinth. The mother who spells I love you with chocolate chips on top of a no-occasion cake is proclaiming loud and clear that she cares. When our stomachs are empty, we get hungry. Symptoms of soul starvation are subtler. Tomorrows and tomorrows are rolling by. Paychecks are being spent on bread and shoes and rent, while the walls of our souls remain bare. If this matters to us, we can do something. We can buy hyacinths to feed the soul. That's the end of the essay. I remember a poem by Elizabeth Barrett Browning that is saying a similar thing. Earth's crammed with heaven, and every common bush afire with God. But only he who sees takes off his shoes. The rest sit round it and pluck blackberries. Also, I very much like Annie Dillard's book, Pilgrim at Tinker Creek, and she again seems to be addressing the same thing. When I was 6 or 7 years old, growing up in Pittsburgh, I used to take a precious penny of my own and hide it for someone else to find. It was a curious compulsion I had. Sadly, I've never been seized by it since. For some reason, I always hid the penny along the same stretch of sidewalk up the street. I would cradle it at the roots of a sycamore, say, or in a hole left by a chipped-off piece of sidewalk. Then I would take a piece of chalk and, starting at either end of the block, draw huge arrows leading up to the penny from both directions. After I learned to write, I labeled the arrows, "Surprise ahead," or "Money this way." And I was greatly excited during all this arrow drawing, and the thought of the first lucky passerby who would receive in this way, regardless of merit, a free gift from the universe. But I never lurked about. I would go straight home and not give the matter another thought until some months later I would be gripped again by the impulse to hide another penny. When I was teaching, I had read my class this passage, and at the end of class, I threw out 100 or a couple of 100 pennies and excused the class and waited to see who would bother and who would take the time to pick up the pennies. As it turned out, I picked up most of the pennies because no one else did. Anyway, I hope that you will, so to say, pick up the pennies that are liberally strewn about us if we will take time to see. Again, this is Helen Cannon with Petals and Prose.